read in the papers, or you'll hear on BBC Radio Humberside on a news bulletin or something about Bruce Springsteen or Cher or Diana Ross, one of these big stars, selling their back catalogue. And you think, well, why? What the heck's that all about then? Apart from obviously making a bit of immediate spending, money, the old 450 million or whatever. This is interesting because I had an email the other day from a fella who said, do you want to speak to Michael? Michael Infante, who is CEO of One Media. They're One Media IP Group, and this is exactly the kind of thing they do. So they've done deals with the producers of Take That, for example, and Heatwave and Culture Club, and all sorts of people. So Michael and I got a chance to have a chat earlier on today, and you might find this quite enlightening. I certainly did. First of all, Michael Infante, tell us about One Media IP Group.
So One Media is a listed company on the London Stock Exchange, founded by me in 2006. We raised initially £1 million to go and start acquiring digital rights at a time when the digital market was just starting. So at that point there, CD, LP, tape were pretty much the dominant forces of medium for buying music. Apple had launched in 2002, 2003, and we saw an opportunity really to just acquire the digital rights. We didn't acquire physical rights. So One Media as a company doesn't manufacture any records, tapes or otherwise, but not like a traditional record label in that respect. We're what they used to call a net label. Over the last 15 years, we've grown the business. We've spent in excess of £15 million on acquiring rights. Most recently, producer rights to Take That, to Culture Club, to Heatwave, and a variety of other, Don Williams, the country and western singer from the States. I mean, the list goes on and on in terms of Jerry, people like that we work with, but also a lot of unknown content. Philip Wesley, one of our larger acquisitions we made 18 months, 2 years ago, who is a modern-day Chopin from America. The revenue streams are marvellous. No one's ever heard of him over here. The same with a band called Mago de Oz, massive in South America and Spain. So we're agnostic to a genre. Look at the income streams. We look at how we can bring benefit to the artist and transparent in the method in which we report.
What a great gap in the market to see, and that's why it's wonderful talking to people like you that have seen these gaps such a long time ago, because now as we're sitting here and talking in 2022, it seems obvious, and you look around and you think, yeah, of course you want the digital rights, and there's all these various markets that it could go towards. But back in the day, I mean, were you seen as a 2006, were you a trailblazer? Did people think, oh, Michael needs his bumps feeling, or was it quite an obvious step for you?
I was considered bonkers at the time. Here's the interesting thing. My previous company was another listed company, Air Music and Media, where we boxed and packaged physical products. We were a very profitable company, and the board at that time that I'd co-founded that business couldn't see the digital market. So I left, divested in the business to start One Media. The fascinating thing, and this is very funny to me now, I won't use certain expressions for radio, but at the time it certainly made you feel a little uncomfortable. We raised £1 million on the OFX market in September 2006. We invested that into various catalogue, one of them being the Motor City catalogue, which is the largest catalogue of Northern Soul and high energy music, just the digital rights at that time, outside of Motown. We use an aggregator to get these up onto what was then only about 20 odd digital stores, because Apple existed. They're all downloading stores, but there wasn't any Amazon, there wasn't any Spotify. These didn't exist. Our first income check came in the September 2006, my first income trip, having raised £1 million from Apple in February 2007 for $127.50. And I remember looking at this check thinking, I've got a shareholders meeting next week. I'm going to sit and hold this check up and say, gentlemen, this has been a great venture. However, the following year, the company turned over £400,000. We got £600,000, £800,000, and so on. This year, we've just turned in $4.5 million, so $6 million. We're a small company on the AIM Stock Exchange, but we're set to scale and grow, and we see a bright future. Specifically now that all eyes are on these very large music acquisitions, the David Bowie, the Bob Dylans, the ABBA, what's next? McCartney, maybe he's on the list, who knows? He's one of the wealthiest of pop performers and writers, and purported value of about $1.4 billion. So I don't know who actually has got a deep enough pocket if you're listening, Mr. McCartney, come talk to us. I'm sure we can work something out. However, music is becoming a currency. The rights have longevity. 70 years after the death of the right, the royalties come in. Now the big hedge funds are looking at it. The banks are looking at it. It's becoming, I'm not going to say it's a cryptocurrency, becoming a revenue stream that now isn't left to the vagaries of, oh, I'm having a hit this year, and then you make a load of money and then nothing. When content's 40 or 50 years old, it's got, you know, a nice steady pace of income. Like Chopin, like Mozart, certain artists will just keep being played forever and ever.
Absolutely. And in the case of artists that are still alive, they still have rights to use the music. If you say, it sounds like you're only buying the sort of digital rebroadcasting rights, if I can call it that. So if, you know, if a Heatwave, for example, or a Take That want to go out and do their thing, they can still do that. They've still got rights to that.
We don't touch performing live acts in terms of what they're doing. And in fact, if we bought the publishing, we want everybody to play those songs, because every time a song is covered by a different band or it has a rebirth and we have the publishing control, then we're on an income stream from that. So as a publisher, our job is actually to get as many bands to play those songs and encourage the old bands. I was having lunch yesterday with Rick Buckler, the drummer, probably the greatest mod revival drummer in the world from The Jam. And we had a great chat yesterday about its 40 years anniversary this year of when The Jam broke up.
Gosh.
I still think of The Jam as being
yesterday. Amazing, isn't it?
40 years. Now, they're still enjoying decent revenue streams from the writing, the publishing, and the playing, and the good radio stations that play. There's a different rate for every time something is played on a radio or TV, used in a sync for a film. It's a lucrative business.
And do you get involved in that stuff as well? Or is you personally, your bit, Michael, are you more interested in the acquisition in the first place? Or do you have an interest in where those bits of digital thing are then used?
Absolutely. We not only acquire the asset, and we call it an asset, and I don't like to say in front of artists, but it is an asset.
Yeah.
We acquire the asset, and then we exploit the asset. We make sure our digital dissemination group called Creative Technicians make sure that it's being exploited in the four corners of the world, in the 205 territories digitally. We're based at Pinewood Studios, and we have a great team there that makes sure. We also police the rights, because we'll have onward royalties to sometimes artists, producers, whatever our deal is. And we have a product called TCAT, Technical Copyright Analysis Tool. It's a unique tool. It works not just for one media, but some of the major record labels as well now. And what its job is to do is to search all the digital stores to ensure transparency and royalty accounting. So we take a greater responsibility, perhaps more than an average record label, to make sure that, you know, not only are we getting our value, but equally the onward royalty earners are continuing to see a stream of money. Because it doesn't just end when a record company buys all the rights out. There are always onward royalties.
And from the point of view of One Media, is it purely audio you're interested in, or is there an extension of what you do that covers a visual art? So if there's a great photographer, a Ranking, as an example, who shoots great stuff, can you get involved with those people and sell their work and buy their rights as well?
Yeah, we have another side on our video side. We acquired from Granada ITV back in 2012 the TV show Men and Motors,
is
now an online free channel to watch on YouTube. Over 3,000 episodes, hosted by Richard Hammond before he went to Top Gear. We also have a host of music videos from the 70s, the 80s, that we have either under license or we have under ownership. So we do exploit video content. The clever part, I think, of what's really happening in this digital world, the world of cryptocurrencies, the world of digital rights, is NFTs. And this is a subject which at the moment is not understood even by people within the industry. An NFT is creating a new right, a virtual right to a physical piece of art. And I think this is something that we as One Media will start looking at in the next year or so.
And that's where I stopped him, Michael Infante, because I'm vaguely interested in NFTs, but I think that's a conversation for another year, or another week of radio. We could be there forever talking about that. I hope you found that as interesting as I certainly do. If you'd like to find out more about One Media, the IP group, they are omip.co.uk.